You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 14 January. We've got U.S. retail sales data due 2:30 this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, some Thobela Bephela from FNB Wealth and Investments and Aspen. They announced, I think it was literally, 29th of December, a trading day or two left of the year, a big deal to sell APAC assets, excluding China. Does this improve the investment case? That is the question. Herman from Pumpendorp from Momentum Investments, talking around emerging markets. We chatted with him last year, and he was certainly saying EM's looking better than developed markets. He's, frankly, ratcheting that up and saying more so after recent developments. And then Craig and Tony from Enbro Capital, finding value and good returns beyond just tech and Mag 7. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb SA removed from another naughty list, this time by the EU. South Africa was added to the EU list in August 23, which required enhanced due diligence on its transactions. Yesterday, we were taken off it. Bloomberg, China's 2025 trade surplus hits $1.2 trillion as exports soar. That is the largest ever. Morning markets, the US was red, S&P and NASDAQ down 0.2%. The East is mostly green. We've got Sydney down a little under 0.1%. Then we've got Tokyo up 1.2%, Hong Kong almost 1% higher, and Tencent just over 1.5% up. Commodities green, gold futures 4,631, Brent 65.36, platinum 2,431, palladium 1,944. The rand is 1640, Bitcoin 95,500, and top 40 opening call 455 points, 0.4% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Thobela Bephela. She's, of course, investment research analyst, F&B Wealth and Investments. Thobela, appreciate the time. Aspen, last year, I mean, they had the cancelled contract at their sterile facility that absolutely slammed the share price. And then late in the year, 29 December, they came with an announcement of what looks like, on paper, a really good deal to sell some of their APAC assets, excluding China. Your thoughts on the deal and where that leaves the business in terms of investability?
Very good morning, Simon, and a happy 2026 for you and your listeners.
Thank
as
you.
Well. So I think, you know, the deal is quite a significant one for them, especially in the context of what you just explained now. But I think it's also important to look at in the context of where and how Aspen has been performing sort of operationally and financially as well. You know, perhaps also optically, because as you mentioned, the share price has embedded more than just the sort of economic fundamentals into the story. You know, sentiments had almost decidedly soured into the end of the year until, of course, the announcement. So it was sort of, they were sort of saved by the bell, really. So, yeah, I think, you know, in the context of the last results that they gave us, full year results, I mean, the group had a tough year. You know, there was a clear split between, you know, the solid performance in the core commercial business and then countered by the significant disruption in the manufacturing operations. And so we did see, you know, sort of the normalized headline earnings falling 29%, which was, you know, in line with guidance, but I mean, guiding well does little for you when the direction of performance is quite negative. And so I think, you know, the operational context, the key takeaway, not to rehash the full year results, but the key takeaway is that the core commercial portfolio sort of held up, but the manufacturing volatility did pull, you know, group earnings much lower. So I think definitely the deal matters for a number of reasons. It was an unsolicited offer. So it was very well received by management, but also by the market. The share price was, I think there was a pop of about 20% on the day. And we've seen positive drift post the announcement as well year to date. So, you know, there's, you know, significance around, not least because, you know, Aspen was not actively looking to sell. I think the main comfort is that this isn't a fire sale. Mm-hmm. You know, they're realizing a mature portfolio of assets at a healthy multiple, considering where, you know, Aspen has been trading, given its risk premium in the eyes of the market. So a healthy cash injection to help them pay down debts and help sort of shore up the recovery of the manufacturing business is quite key. I think it accelerates for them, you know, the deleveraging story. They did explicitly say that they intend to use the proceeds to reduce debt and optimize the capital structure, lower financing costs, and simplify the lending base. So that aligns with, you know, management sort of focus. It could improve sentiments because, you know, as I mentioned, it was sort of unsolicited. And so sort of improving the market mood towards the name in general. It does, I think, also just give sort of management's sharper focus. They are sort of setting off, you know, quite a large earnings contributor from the business. So it does narrow down their sort of geographic footprints and so their operational footprints. And I think that also brings into focus their sort of the strategy that they've put into place. And so, a few positives to take away from there. But I think the market might be keeping an eye on sort of the execution story. You know, the earnings mix is changing, but also the reinvestment discipline is going to be very closely watched from here on out.
That's actually a great point. It is that change. And as you say, it's that manufacturing, it's the sterile facilities, Abeja and France, they need to get capacity running through there. We'll leave it there. Simthobela Phephela, investment research analyst, FNB Wealth and Investments. Appreciate the early morning. And that's our poll on LinkedIn and Twitter. Does this make it a better investment case for Aspen? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Herman van Pompendorp, he is Momentum Investments Head of Asset Allocation. Herman, always appreciate the early morning insights. You and I chatted last year. We were talking emerging markets versus developed markets. You were very much in favor of the emerging market, and certainly that's what we saw in 2025 in both home currencies and, frankly, in US dollars did incredibly well. If anything, a note you put out recently, early this year, what we're seeing enhances that, and I'm thinking U.S. military action in Venezuela, which adds to geopolitical uncertainty, U.S. Or threats to the Fed chair independence over the weekend. The case for emerging markets is growing, or perhaps the case against developed markets is fading, whichever way we want to look at that coin.
Morning, Simon. Yes, I think definitely so. I mean, this is just a continuation of what we saw last year of Trump policies. I mean, Trump policies last year very much related to economic policy. Remember all the trade tariffs that he put in place and so forth. But this year is increasingly started focusing on foreign policy. So very aggressive on foreign policy. I mean, obviously the incursion into Venezuela, one more example of this. And it is basically telling us that the broader investment environment is one that says that, you know, you've got to be very careful as far as the U.S. Is concerned. If you see that as a less reliable investment destination, then other investment destinations become much more interesting to invest in. And obviously, emerging markets feature in that, and South Africa as well. So, interestingly, I mean, we said last year that Trump, strangely enough and ironically enough, was positive for South African markets last year. I mean, it was positive for equities because it was because of this thinking by global investors that maybe we should put some of our future money less into the US and more into non-US markets, including emerging markets, including SA.
And there is value in those markets. And, you know, the emerging markets are different depending on the territories. But broadly, there is value. We've had the investment sentiment has been US-centric for, I mean, I don't know, 5 years, a decade maybe. And the EMs have lagged behind.
Yes, no, definitely. I mean, and that's, as you rightly point out, that is reflected in valuations. I mean, if you look at emerging market valuations relative to developed market valuations, they are trading at levels that are below historical levels. So again, they look cheap, emerging markets to developed markets. And then if you look at South Africa, now South Africa is trading at one standard deviation cheap relative to emerging markets. We can just think of how cheap we are to developed markets. So I think it's all in all a situation where investors are saying, listen, the US is maybe not the risk off in the sort of the risk off or risk environment that we need to be in. We would rather want to be in a less risky environment where emerging markets are now seen as less risky than the US. So that's quite ironic. But this is what Trump has brought to the party through his policies.
And what we have seen, and the foreigners, and if we think locally, they certainly have been buying our bonds. And they've done very well by buying our bonds. It's the equity that we need to start seeing, and it'll happen. But this is my sense is a process. This isn't something that sort of turns on a dime.
No, I think we always say bond investors are like investment tourists, so they come in and out very quickly. Equity investors, a little bit more medium-term kind of focused, so they need to be comfortable that the fundamentals underlying the companies that they invest in are improving, and therefore that's also linked to the macroeconomic environment. But I think all of the factors that we're seeing in South Africa, that we're moving from 0.5% growth in 2024 to maybe 1% and a bit in 2025, and maybe closer to 2% in 2026, that momentum and that delta, the change in momentum in growth economically, locally in SA, it's probably going to induce some interest, particularly after such a strong period of equity market performance by South African equities. And, we need to also know that there's a bit of a recency bias among global investors. They don't look at all markets in a very elaborate way on a continual basis. So when they start seeing that, countries or companies that they haven't looked at for a long time, like South African companies, suddenly perform exceptionally well, then they say, maybe it's time for us to spend a little bit more time on this specific market and these companies in those markets, and maybe let's commit some time firstly, and then secondly, maybe commit some capital as time goes by after they've done the analysis. So again, that takes time. It's not like a bond market investor that'll come in quickly and go out quickly again.
I take your point. The trend is right. The underlying fundamentals are moving in the right direction, and equity will come, but it's going to take them a minute or three. We'll leave it there. Herman von Pompendorp, Momentum Investments, Head of Asset Allocation. Appreciate the early morning. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Craig and Tony. He's CIO at Anbro Capital. Craig, appreciate the time as always. Your, I suppose, beginning of the year missive hit my inbox on Monday. A bunch I want to touch on. The one I really liked was around calendars. And and in South Africa, we are big on the year-end holiday. And of course, there's Christmas, there's New Year. Markets and market trends, agnostic to them, it's just another trading day. We get so het up on it, but it really is not perhaps that important.
It's 100% true, Simon, and Happy New Year to you and the listeners.
Thank you.
I think, for some reason, we all tend to fixate on, small blocks of time. And, the periods seem to be getting smaller and smaller by the day.
Yeah.
If you just look at things like, average holding periods in stocks, for example, at the moment, it's sitting at around 6 months. If you look at the 1960s, it was about 8 years.
Yeah.
So I think, the problem is that, we're all getting, fixated on shorter and shorter time periods. And I think, although I'm considered an institutional investor by my day job, I very much like to think as a retail investor when it comes to my investment duration. And I think, the one key advantage that retail investors have over institutional investors is that they aren't measured by, monthly, quarterly, biannual or annual returns, right? We don't have to beat the clock, so to speak, And I think that's becoming more and more important because, days go by and weeks go by and years go by, but essentially what's always worked is just building good, solid, diversified portfolios and holding those companies for a long time.
Yeah, and when you say it like that, it's alarmingly simple. And I'll take another line from your Monday missive. I mean, 2025 was a year of that was a wall of worry. And I actually was starting with a list, and by the time I got to April, I had to turn over the, you know, get a new page going, and it was only April. Yet for all of the worries around tariffs and geopolitical and all of the other bits and pieces, markets were doing quite fine. I mean, they'd kind of got on with it. Now, there's T's and C's, you know, there was locally miners and the like. But I mean, there's always something to worry about. To your point, often the best thing to do is go have a cup of tea or a cup of coffee.
Yes, 100%. You know, if one looks just at the world and how the world evolves over time, and something I've seen in my investment career is, you know, people adapt, companies adapt, yeah. Markets adapt. You know, the information we get thrown at us in real time is quite quickly absorbed, understood, and reacted to. And then, you know, at the end of the day, you know, people realize that this is the new normal, or this is where we are, and, you know, what do we need to do about it? And then they carry on with life. So in most cases, it, you know, it doesn't really pay to look at the headline risk on a daily basis. One really has to have a very big picture, long-term view when it comes to your investment horizon.
Yeah, and I like that. People do adapt. And I keep on saying, you know, the sort of SA Inc. companies in South Africa that have managed the last decade or so, man, they've learned to adapt in the extreme. Changing tack recently, you've got a couple of different portfolios. You've got your unicorns and some others. But the one that really stood out to me was, I suppose we could almost call it your, I mean, it's a non-tech. It's kind of boring, but it actually had a really good year. It was healthcare. It was insurance. It was utilities. Everyone's always talking tech, but there is value and profit in other parts of the market as well.
Yes, 100%. I think, you know, for a long time, people have looked at the stellar returns that tech companies have delivered and thought that it's really, that's the only game in town when it comes to investing. But it's not. You know, an important thing to realize is that, A, you know, you can't have all your eggs in one basket, and having just purely tech-only type investments is very risky. And B, you know, it's a very big, vast world out there, and there's lots of opportunities which can be easily overlooked if one just focuses on tech. And, you know, this particular portfolio that you're referring to, it's dynamic compounding portfolio. You know, this portfolio, it focuses on the types of companies that we use on a daily basis and that provide products and services that we need rather than that we might want. Yeah. And, you know, this portfolio was born actually when I was sitting, you know, at my desk during COVID. And I had this epiphany where, you know, in some respects, you know, we were sitting at home, the world was closed around us, but it became clear that you just couldn't live without certain things. You know, you needed electricity, you needed hospitals, you needed medicine, you needed certain types of insurance, you needed food. And, you know, really what we then thought was, well, you know, this is potentially something which is not necessarily, as you say, you know, very exciting or tech orientated, but still, you know, can provide solid returns over time without the volatility that people might be expecting in the higher octane stocks.
And I love that point because it's what we need. And it comes back to your earlier point around the ability to adapt. I mean, take insurance, take healthcare, take utilities. Think what they were 100 years ago, a decade ago, compared to now. These are companies that have seen it all and will continue to see it all. And importantly, they're dividend payers. This is a 3% dividend yielding portfolio, which in hard currency is a big number.
Yes, 100%. And I think, once again, you know, you hit on some key points there. When it comes to things like dividends and cash flow, you know, companies that can pay dividends which are that high, you know, in relative terms, obviously have lots of cash and lots of cash generating ability.
Yeah.
Also, to your point, you know, they've stood the test of time. You know, they've been around for decades and have gone through economic cycles and recessions and depressions and booms and busts and all that kind of thing. And the last point I'll make on them is, you know, they aren't always the most romantic industries. You know, I mean, some companies we're investing are in the pest control industry or waste removal.
Yeah.
But if you look at companies like Rollins and Waste Management, for example, I mean, the returns over the long term have been stunning. You know, 10-year returns have, you know, beaten the S&P 500 by quite a margin. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's the things we need, the necessities out there, and, you know, you can make good money out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's what we need. I mean, pest control. Yeah, you got pests, you got a problem, you need to make a plan. That's the dynamic compounding portfolio. We'll leave it there. Craig and Tony, CIO, Enbrow Capital, always appreciate the insights.
That's it for today. We were chatting with Fahima Adia, she of course Momentum Securities, yesterday. Looking back at that Mr. Price plan to buy into the discount German fashion retailer, asked you if it was a good deal. 40% said no, not at all. Almost a third says, well, the market doesn't like it. The rest say, yeah, it definitely has some potential. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, checking in on Operation Vulindlela.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.